Thank you, Susan and Mark. I should say, when we started down this road, I think we expected to find at least some countries, some industrialized, advanced countries that were doing something fantastic that we could, that we had just missed. As you hear from their report, that's not the case. I think it's important to know, to have learned that as well. And it just shows that we have a lot of challenges ahead. But rather than my comments, let me turn to Howard Nelson and then Rick Hess.
I've been able to spend a week with this paper, which isn't enough. International work is a lot harder than you think. Each country has its own study. A lot of the material here came from, in their report, came from Teachers Matters, which is a book OECD put out. It's a monster of a book to begin with. And then there's a country report for each country that can be 50 to 100 pages long. And it seems like they've mastered a lot of this. For the most part, I think the report is straight up, factual, accurate. My favorite point is the salary comparison of the way to do it is to compare teacher salaries to gross domestic product per capita, so I don't have to go through that argument. I also think the discussion of unions was fairly factual and descriptive, which is about all you can do because the context of unions in different countries is really different, and it's hard to label them as strong or weak or whatever. But what I'd like to do is turn to some other things. How about student achievement? I've rated countries, some select countries, on student achievement. The first three countries, Korea and Japan, are well-known high achievers. Australia gets a lot of ink in this report, so I included that. I put Belgium in because Jonathan Stossel featured Belgium in his 2020 report, Blasting American Public Schools, in his famous study of giving five Belgium students a test and five American students a test and saying Belgium wins. So I wondered what the data said. Sweden's in here for obvious reasons. It's been mentioned about 10 times already. Germany I put in because I thought it was a low-achieving nation with high pay, and it turns out it's not exactly low-achieving, just average. U.S., United Kingdom, because there are a lot of pay reforms, and then Chile, because there's the school-wide performance ratings. The ratings I got to make up, and I haven't published them. I might change them if I actually get that far, but basically you get an A if you're in the top third, a B if you're in the middle third, C if you're on the bottom third.
That's pretty generous, huh?
So, I should get a G.
Yeah, that's a good question, but anyway, the rating is based heavily on math and science because TIMSS is nothing but math and science. PISA, we hear all sorts of stuff about math, but there's actually a reading component and a science component. And science, the comprehensive science thing's coming out pretty soon. So you see the grades. Now, let's connect this to pay. A very simplified pay comparison. This is taken directly from a paper as yet to be published by Helen Ladd at Duke University. It basically divides this teacher salary divided by per capita GDP and puts it into thirds. And what do you know? There's sort of a correlation between pay and achievement. Korea, Germany, and Japan. Well, Germany doesn't exactly fit. Then Australia, United Kingdom. Finland's a high-achieving country with average pay. And then you've got U.S. and Sweden on the bottom. Then I'm going to sneak in some effort at shortages or supply and demand. The data aren't really good across countries, a point that's made in the paper fairly well. Again, high-achieving nations. There isn't much attrition at this point in time. By the way, attrition includes, sometimes it's referred to as leavers in this country, retirement, people that just take off and never come back, people that take a leave of more than a year. In the middle, you have Australia and Germany, and then along there you see U.S. and Sweden, the low-paying countries out there with the highest category of attrition. The actual figure for the United States is about 7.5%, so it's not, you know, like 15% or 20%. Now, salary structure. Let me go a little bit slow here explaining what this is. It's the mid-career 15 years, what do teachers get paid relative to starting salaries? Starting salary is 100%. So if you see 150%, that means that at 15 years, a teacher makes 50% more than the beginning teacher. And you'll see that the U.S. is about average. So U.S. is not unique in rewarding experience. And you might even conclude that there's, well, it's hard to conclude anything to tell you the truth, because the Asian countries, the two Asian countries here, tend to advance teachers out compared to the starting salary quite a bit, and the European countries much less so. And that pattern is really exaggerated when you look at the top salary, where in Korea, the top salary approaches three times what the beginning salary is. And in Germany, you get the opposite extreme. And this is a combination, by the way, of it could be very low starting salaries or very high starting salaries that yield this pattern. And this is exactly the same graph. I took the percentages off and I put on the years to top. Now, I'm not graphing years to top, so be careful in looking at this, because if you look at Germany, you'll see that it's almost 30 years to the top, and yet there isn't much spread between the bottom and the top. And if you look at the United Kingdom, there's a bigger spread, but it only takes 5 or 6 years to get to the top of the scale in the United Kingdom. And all these figures are, you know, average. These salary schedules are a lot more complex than this data would tend to indicate. So what else is important in the schedules? Well, additional years of education are rewarded, some as in the U.S., but some of the European countries are different. You have to have the education up front just to get certified. Mm-hmm. So to be a high school teacher, it might take 6 years of college education in Germany. But the point is the same, is more education, more pay. More pay for outstanding performance? Well, the high-achieving countries don't have it. Strong unions. The point's been made here. I put a negative next to the U.S. check mark because in some states, the unions are just as strong as European unions. And in other states, collective bargaining is prohibited, and it's in a totally different environment. And then all these countries have a coherent common curriculum. Australia being the exception, and the United States, of course. Let's see, I'll hold up on that for a second. I want to make a few comments about performance pay. A lot of times, people want to change the teachers to adapt to the system, but teachers are same sort of people are going to be teachers no matter what kind of pay system you have. I went back to our membership survey of a year ago, and just to give you an idea of what the market is from the supply side for performance-based pay, we asked teachers if they favored additional compensation for knowledge, skills, and responsibilities. 95% strongly favor. That's not a surprise. Additional compensation for high needs or hard to staff schools, 88% favor or strongly favor. It's important to note that, because sometimes people say unions don't, the single salary schedule doesn't allow you to put more money into the hard to staff schools. And that's not true. And unions are often the ones, usually the ones, that bring these proposals to the table. Now, extra pay for shortage area certifications, 77% support. We were kind of surprised at that. and there's much less strong support for that, but there is support in the teaching profession. And then we asked the question about paying teachers extra, using multiple measures, possibly test scores, state and district level. Do you like that? 30% said yes, only 10% strongly favored. And I also looked at inexperienced teachers, and the data was no different for them in contrast to the surveys that Mark and Susan found. Okay, a couple of comments on Sweden. The teacher salary dispersion has not increased a lot there. The program's young. I'm not sure how old it is exactly, 3, 4, or 5 years. But it's not like some teachers have shot out and are highly paid and others have been punished and they're low paid. And Susan actually described how the system works. It might have gone by you, but the union is still involved in it. As we understand it, about a third of the negotiations are between the principal or the employer and the teacher. The union gets to see it. The union doesn't object. It goes through. Another third, the union actually represents the teacher like a free agent or something. And then another third is sort of a mixture of the two models. It's also important to note that student performance is not part of the Swedish performance, well, individualized pay plan. It's hard to tell what is, but some things we found are participation in developing teaching methods, establishing student involvement, getting them interested in learning, talking to parents, collaboration with other teachers, kind of soft things. But it makes the point that Susan did, that the whole point is to get principals and teachers on the same page with regard to some goals. Denver, a couple things to note there is that the evaluation showed that student achievement went up a little bit at middle school and high school levels, but not at the elementary level. There's a substantial pay for knowledge and skills component, which is much like the Douglas County program, just to the south of Denver. Something that the AFT has been prominent in developing and advertising for a decade now. And it also is not linked directly to value added or student test score gains. Instead, goals are negotiated, two of them, and extra pay comes from meeting the goals, and everybody's goals are a little bit different. Okay, so in conclusion, I think performance-based pay, while it needs to be studied and worked with, is not really the important thing, that we really need to concentrate on the supply of teachers prepared and able to teach in urban and rural high-poverty schools, and that we need to focus on working conditions, and by that, I don't mean class size necessarily, but order, resources and administrative support. And then I think we also need a competitive, solid base pay. Then we can go to performance pay. And this again should focus on shortage areas, shortage hard to staff schools, and those sort of things related to the supply of teachers. Thank you.